public high school and they need to be ready, or they have come up through middle school and come to us in high school and have been learning either Common Core or SOLs. Unfortunately, both Texas and Virginia were non-Common Core places. So I had to kind of incorporate all of those standards to make sure all my bases were covered and what I knew historically. I mean, I knew Texas stuff. So I kind of meshed Texas and Virginia and Common Core into my skills checklist. So my skills checklist started off with a lot of skills. Again, if on the, when you get the link, you could click on this page and it will give you a copy of my skills checklist if you would like to see the whole thing. But I had a lot and it was kind of hard to manage. And I, you know, it was hard to figure out where things should be placed. Now it's down to 30. I can fit them all on one page. I have 30, and then my 13 units is a checklist. So now I have it in a way that my students can have a piece of paper. And after every assessment, they could monitor how they're doing. And at the end of the year, they should know. That's the belief too, right? What is my strength and what is my weakness? I want them to have, something to back up their claims of what they know and what they don't know, or what they know and what they need to continue working on. So I also wanted them to read a little better than curriculum normally, or standards normally read. Because we don't use a book and we are a one-to-one school, they can Google everything. I mean, they can find resources. So I wanted the words to be something that they could read and understand, and that they could Google them and it would lead them pretty close to the right spot, that they didn't have to edit what they were looking at, or that they would get some crazy algebra 2 pre-cal level when we were only algebra 1. So the way that I shortened all of my skills is, you'll see that there are some of them here that are pretty ambiguous. Number one is represent quantitative situations algebraically. I added the word quantitative in there. It's really just appeasement for our testing. We were pretty weak in our quantitative, quantitative mathematics, which to me was really just comparison of things. So whether they're equal to each other and we're writing equations, or we're writing inequalities where things are greater than or less than, or we're comparing charts or anything like that. So this one topic, I put everything in. If they ever have to write an equation or write something down, take from words and make it algebra, it goes in this. So I test this skill almost every single unit, because as we move through the different functions, you do that with every function. So it's not specific to any one thing. I also have some, like number 9, analyze data. That fits a lot of stuff. This is where I can throw in questions about, like, whether it's a function or not. Those kinds of quick, where's the max? Where's the min? Where's it increasing? Where's it decreasing? When did the rocket hit the ground? Kind of, you know, where's the zero kind of questions, analyzing data. That fits a lot of things. But also, we have things that are really strictly new to algebra. And that's the first time they get those, that kind of skill, like the domain and range, right? Number 12. So it's the first time we start talking about domain and range. I want that skill to be specific and separate. So that's where I started. And then I started labeling everything I did with a skill number. So if I couldn't find a skill number to fit what I was doing, I didn't do it. Because if this was where my kids were going and what the basis of my algebra class was, then all of those problems that didn't fit this didn't need to be there. So I edited all my quizzes and tests. Every time I gave something, it was, can I put a skill number on there? And if I could, it was probably a legit question. But if I couldn't, it was pointless. It was like that one, you know, challenge question in the textbook or something. So it got rid of all of those. So I started being able to really streamline my quizzes and tests. And I'll show you what that looks like on my quizzes and tests also. So here's a portion of my test in which you'll see up at the top, I have TS, and this one is 4.14. So it's tested skill because my quizzes are quiz. So it's tested skill, unit 4, skill 14. So it matches that checklist. And then I do write it out for them so that they know. So I have that. The bottom, you'll notice I had to put 4.01. I used two digits for all of them. Because if I just put 4.1, which I started with, and it did not work out, when I got to 4.10, the kids were confused because 4.1 and 4.10 were the same number to them. But to me, I was reading it as not as a number decimal, but as a, you know, this is test number, skill number. So I changed it so that it would be a little more obvious in that aspect. I think if I had to do it all over again, and I could probably still change it, I might use a dash there instead of a decimal. It's just the decimal was easier in the grade book than a dash. So, and I list them in my grade book like this, TS414, TS401, all like that. So you can see the whole skill for the graphing linear functions. If you notice, there's basic problems there because I need to know, do you just know the basics? You know, can you get by on this skill? And then there's usually one application problem or a new problem in a way they hadn't seen before. And I'll explain why in a minute there. But those problems tend to come from SAT and ACT type practice tests. I have a book of SAT practice, ACT practice. I have the old SAT book or PSAT books that come out and they're done. And I just look for problems that are related to that skill. So I put one of those on the test. They always end up on tests, not on quizzes. And I know it goes against my original belief of you should never test them on something they haven't seen, except the concept they've seen. I want to see, can they apply it to the next level? So my tests are always cumulative. My tests usually have about 4 or 5 skills on them, and they get a grade for each skill. So if there's 5 skills, they'll get 5 grades in the grade book, 1 for each skill. My quizzes happen about every 3 days. I usually get 2 or 3 in a unit. They are only 1 skill, 2 max if they kind of overlap each other. So my quizzes are really only like 3 to 5 questions long. I'm just checking at basic level. So my quiz would contain something like 5, 6, and 7, but not 8. It's just the basis. Do we know what we're talking about on a quiz? So we access it like that. And then I explain my scale. So with standards-based grading, you really can't grade the way that you are used to. It's not a 100-point scale. I'm not taking points away or adding points. I'm not looking for all those little bits and pieces. I'm looking holistically at what they're doing. I want to look at the whole thing and say, do you know what you're doing? Have you shown me enough to prove that you know this skill, or do you need more? And so I started looking at, you know, how can I show that? Well, I had taught AP calculus, and I really liked the idea of their rubric, where they grade their free response questions on a scale, right? You get 0 to 5 points based on, you know, how much or what you show. And sometimes there's very specific things they're looking for, like you have to say this or name this in order to get your points. And mine are kind of like that. I have an extension problem. So I went with that aspect. So I searched the web again. Sarah's blog, Everybody is a Genius, had this. It's a beautiful 5-point scale. It includes a 3+, which helped my purposes, helped me for my purpose. So I, applied this idea. So on mine, though, you'll notice, and I think I got the words from hers. She had it written like this. Somebody color coded it. It's not on her file color coded. I found that somewhere else. I cannot find the who it was. The original creator, while I have a copy of it, didn't put their name in the creation part of it, and I cannot find it anywhere on the web. But I think it's a genius how it's color coded. So I leave it that way for my students. So I tell them that, you know, the basic, I can do the basics of this skill, meaning I have done just enough to pass this class, is the level 3, right? That's the basis of like passing AP classes, like a 3 is passing. So a 3. And then I look at, and I really do say these words in my head when I'm grading their paper. So I look at the section holistically. I look at the whole thing. And the first thing I determine is, did they show me enough to show me the basic skill? Do they know what they're doing or are they not? And if they're not, then they're somewhere in the red. And then I decide whether it's, they've done some good things, like some real mathy things to get the 2, even though they're not quite at the skill at the level I need them to be at. And then the 1, the most important words of this is I tried. So as long as they tried a valid mathematical attempt, it could be nothing related to what we're doing, but if it's a valid mathematical attempt, then I give them the 1. If they leave it blank, I tell them, sorry, you know, it's blank. It's the 0. It's the invisible number on the scale there. I can't give you anything, but I give them the 1. And then I look at on the other side, if they did show mastery, where can I put them at? So, you know, if they just need to be a little more careful with it, they made a couple mistakes, things like that, the 3+, nearly perfectly. I tell my kids, these are the ones, like, let's say it was solving equations. You solve 3 equations, they all look great, except the second equation, the answer was supposed to be -2, you had +2, and it's because you made a sign error somewhere in your problem. You know, it's that one little pesky error. That's the nearly perfect. It's not anything that really keeps you from understanding the thing, but you're not perfect. So I, you know, have that scale, and it's that. And the be more careful would probably be more like, let's say on every single problem, instead of doing the addition subtraction step first, they were multiplying or dividing first, and they weren't dividing by everything on each side. So it was, they were missing some things, but they were still working out and getting things correct, or not correct just because they were flipping that, but they did it on every single problem. So if you fix that one error, right? That one mistake, their whole quiz is better. And I tell them that that's like bulk discount grading, right? You did the exact same thing on everything. In traditional grading, you'd be marking points off of every single problem. To me, it's just, you need to be more careful. There's one thing wrong here, really, conceptually, one thing wrong. And that gets you at the 3+ level. The 5, I point out, does not say that you were perfect. It does not mean you got every single thing correct on there. This is where the I can solve unfamiliar problems on this. So I don't give them the 5 unless they can do this number 8 problem also. They can do 5, 6, and 7 and get a 4 because it's all correct, but didn't get 8 because it's the new application problem. But they only get the 5 if they do 8 and the other things. They have to be able to do the application, the unfamiliar, the extra, right? To be able to take what they learn and apply it in a new situation. So this scale honestly makes grading so much faster. I mark, or I usually have a highlighter or a colored pen, and I just mark on their paper where things went wrong. And then I just look at it holistically. I keep a scale of this over there. And then I have it up there and I look at it every time I grade. So I tell them that that's what these scores mean. However, my grade book doesn't know this, right? My grade book doesn't know this scale. And unfortunately, my grade book is a school, right? Like the grade book you have to use for the school. So if I entered a 3 out of 5 in my grade book, it would convert it to a 60. But a 60 on our scale is failing, right? 60 out of 100 on our, you know, A's are in the 90s, B's are in the 80s, C's are in the, where am I, 70s, D's are in the 60s. Our D ends at 63. So anything below a 63 is an F. So a 3 out of 5 would give them an F when I've been trying to instill in them that the 3 is mastery, right? So I have to trick my grade book into doing what I want. So since the C level is mastery, C level is where everything begins. When they get a 3, I enter a 75. And actually, I don't even do out of 100. I do 7.5 out of 10. I do everything out of 10 because it's just easier. But I enter a 7.5. That does not mean they earned a 75 on their quiz or whatever. Because I really want them to get out of that thinking. I did not, they always come to me, where'd you take points off? I'm like, I don't take points off. I don't give points. I don't take points away. I look holistically at, can you do it or not? So they see the numbers on their test and quiz, even though the grades are what go in my grade book. So when parents pull up a progress report, they see the numbers. They see the 195, 85, 75. They don't see the other thing. So I trick my grade book. However, this still kind of matches my my belief anyway. You know, you're looking at, there's one failing grade on the regular scale of things, right? There's all that discussion about the gap from 0 to 63 being way more Fs than possible passing grades, right? There's 63 Fs, which only leaves, 37 grades, right? Valid grades. So it's not proportional anyway. So a long time ago, I stopped giving anything below a 50 anyway. So even if I showed a 0 on their paper, they got a 50 in the grade book. I've been doing that for years. It was one of the ways I could kind of counteract those beliefs that I couldn't figure out how to do. So this drives this idea. And they do get used to it. They start to do it. And honestly, if I have any arguments in the beginning of the year, I say, okay, let me grade it traditionally. Because when I have only 5 questions on a quiz and they miss all 3 because they did 1 problem wrong, like one concept wrong, and they were sitting at a 3 or a 3+, but I grade it in the traditional way, it is always lower, always. So the minute they argue and I say, fine, I'll grade your stuff traditionally, they immediately change their minds and never argue again. So I haven't really had a problem with that because they do see that it is for the best for them. So in this, the idea of them being able to learn from their mistakes, right? And to make these things, you know, that you should be able to try again and do over. I allow retakes for anything that's in the red, meaning a 2 or a 1. And my retakes are skill-based. They look just like my quizzes. So if they wanted to come in and retake skill 14, they would only get a little half sheet of paper with skill 14 on it. And I only do the basic level. So the highest they get in mine is a 3, because this is where I got the most pushback. You know, we're in a pre-K through 12 independent private school, you know, college bound, everybody's, you know, GPA matters. And of course, everybody's an A student. So when I was allowing anybody to retake, I was getting the kids who were getting 4s trying to come in and get a 5. And I'm like, that's not really how it worked, because in my system, my 5 was the, you can apply it. But they were going home and getting tutoring and then wanted to come in and do kind of like the same type of problem. And that's not how it worked. So I stopped that and just said, you know what? Really, all I care about is you making it through my class. So I allow anything below to get a retake up to a 3. And I will completely replace their grade at that 3 level. And so they can retake as many times as they need to, just that skill for the 3 level. And what that did was it reduced the amount of kids coming in to do retakes in the first place. So that was better on me. But I really just keep a stack of extra problems that relate to that subject, that skill. And they come in and say, Miss, I need to retake skill 14. And I go, great, I have one right here. It takes them about 5-10 minutes because it's just the basics of the skill. And I go, yep, you know it, or nope, you don't. They really kind of have to almost make 100 on it because it's only the basic skill, but it's, you know, it's 3 problems. So they're just showing that they have it now. And that has been a lifesaver. Just having those. And now that I've done it for a couple of years, I kind of have a bank of these little half sheet quizzes. So I don't need, you know, I don't need to worry about that. They come in, I have one ready. And it doesn't matter when they come in and do that. So this led me to stop grading homework. I don't grade homework. I believe on this scale that my quizzes and tests truly tell me, you know, what they know and what they don't know. So I only grade assessments. I provide practice every night. It's digital, usually something like Delta Math, where they can keep doing as many problems as they want, or Math Bits worksheets, or things where they can gain, you know, see how problems are worked through. And I tell them it's for them. If they do 3 problems and everything's great, then they're fine. But if they do 3 problems and they're not doing well, then they know they need to come get help. They don't need to do a worksheet of 10 problems to show me. And I know that they've been practicing because I grade their assessments. I know based on their quiz or their test that they've been doing those aspects. So my tests end up being about double the amount of quizzes. So In a single unit, I do about 2 to 3 quizzes. So that's 2 to 3 skills. And on my tests, I test like 4 to 6 skills. So they get 4 to 6 grades for every test put in there and 2 or 3 grades for each quiz put in there. So in a unit, they will have at least 2 grades, you know, 2 grades for each skill. Somebody was asking about earning the 4 to a 5. All of my tests are cumulative also. So just because unit 1 tests, they didn't do so well, maybe they made a 3 or a 3+, they certainly have that opportunity when it pops back up again on another test to increase it to that. But otherwise, in my case, it was turning into a case of grade grubbing again, where they were really just looking at the difference between a 95 and 100 in the grade book. I was like, no, it's about the level. So they did that. So I provide practice. I stop grading all of that. And then here's been my results. So 3 years ago, my class average was an 81. And I had 7 out of 61 total. And this was only algebra classes, so I only looked at that. 7 out of 61 who had to repeat. And this was when I was still grading homework. So I was grading homework. They, of course, had all the answers. I was really just checking to see if they did it. It was completion. And so I still had seven had to repeat the course. And I felt bad because there was 2 of them there. And I put the D's and C's in there because we have a rule that if they're in eighth grade, most of our eighth graders take algebra, but they have to make at least a C or higher to get the credit. Because we don't want them entering high school struggling already. So we make them retake it for a better grade come their ninth grade year. So we had, you know, this, I had this amount. So I stopped grading homework because I figured if they're, you know, if they can master the tests, then they can master the tests. That's the whole point, right? If you master all the concepts, then you should move on to the next course. I'm not the gatekeeper because you don't like to do homework. So the next year when I eliminated homework, I still use standard-based grading though. So I stopped the homework, 5 points every day kind of thing. And I had 8 out of 68 students. So about the same percentage, but you'll notice my F's moved up to the D area. I did have more students, but my average was higher. That was good. But then this last year, once I really got the hang of it, it really dropped. I only had 4 out of 70 who needed to repeat the course. And one of them left the school because that F, it was the same F. Both times it was the same kid. So he had already repeated the course. I'm hoping this year is better. I don't know if I can do better than 5% retention in there, but it's really, really brought that up. And now that I'm no longer grading homework, you know, it's a time saver like crazy. I have so much more time for warm-ups that I don't have to go over homework anymore. And I think that's, yes, 10 o'clock exactly. So you can find me, you see the copy of the presentation as there's a bit.ly.com/move2SBG, and you can have your own copy of the presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Farrica, for being with us tonight. Our next Tuesday, we'll be talking about ELL strategies in a high school math classroom, and we will be you'll get all the information for the presentation. Our presenters would be Jennifer Thomas and Carrie Ferguson. Thank you very much, everyone, for attending the webinar today.